Whenever I will be the dictator of the world, I will make the whole world to work in a one time zone. And that's going to be a Helsinki time zone. No, it's not. That would be just super convenient. Everybody would be actually working in the same time zone. But I've heard that that doesn't work. Anyway, recording is now on. and it's recorded, that's fine. We always used to start, we should always start with a small joke, if nothing else, and let's see if I can actually get the clicker to work so we can actually start walking through the slides. That's, by the way, an awesome start for the January 2015 Patterns and Practices community call. Vesa telling that whenever he is a dictator of the world. Interesting. Anyway, so welcome everybody. So this is the first community call for this year. And the target of today is actually to go through some of the slides relatively fast. So obviously, I want to tell you what we're up to, how we work, what are the new stuff within the slide perspective. But then we also want to spend time on the demos. So we have prepared four demos. And there will be four different persons actually demonstrating those demos. So let's see if that goes well. Usually that means that there will be some technical issues. And then we'll swing and improvise based on the status what we're seeing. Because there will be, I'm already seeing 25 people attending on the call. Please use the IM window at least first. We can open up the audio then later on in the Q&A sessions. But I want to go through some slides and then we can, during the demo section, use the instant messenger window in the link for chatting and input. And obviously, if you have a really, really, really urgent thing what you want to mention, you can unmute yourself. But everybody understands that if there's 25 people in a call and everybody would be using their audio, that simply doesn't work. Well, actually 29 people already, so that's already a good sign. Now 28, it probably was something what I said. So let's have a monthly highlights section. So what was actually new within the January release? What was the new stuff? What's the interesting stuff? We're gonna concentrate on the contributions and other topics. We will have some new, let's say, news related on some of the articles and some of the let's say, processes what we are growing on top of the BNP, which we are super excited on. For example, we will have a mechanism to get community contributions directly updated to the MSDN. And I think that's a super, super, super thing. So anybody of you guys or girls within the call who want to contribute, and help you have the most awesome article what you blocked done for your blog posts and you would like to that one included in MSDN, we will have a channel to do that, and that's an early let's say early discussions related on what will happen. Let's actually continue. And while we're actually waiting for this one, let's play around with where are you located. Bert, if you don't mind, I can see that Brian is trying to send me some messages in IM, but it's really difficult for me to reply on back him because I'm actually talking within the video, within the recording. So if you don't mind actually being Brian Michelli, if you can help him. On the top right corner of the slide, there's this small pen. Oh, you should be able to see that if it works. And from there, you're able to select then the location, and you're able to stamp yourself on the map. For some reason, whenever I try to stamp myself in Helsinki, it will put my location to St. Petersburg, which it really doesn't make any sense. I can see that the Sweden guys had the similar problems. Or maybe it's the left arrow target, which was actually the location. So we have US people, European people. This is pretty much as expected. We're not expecting that many Asian or APAC people to be involved just because they're essentially sleeping. And we can say that at least four persons were able to do it. I would love to be actually in here, and then that would be a nice location to visit, and I haven't been in New Zealand. Okay, never mind. Some interactivity, if nothing else, for those who were able to participate on that one. And we have additional people in the US. That's actually really good. Good. So it seems that this thingy doesn't work that well because you guys can't actually add yourself on the things. That's fine. So let's actually move on the things. So Well, this is just a more or less marketing things. Please remember, aka MS Office Dev BMP. That will right now land you, if you haven't actually tested that, that will land you to the wiki pages of Office 365 Dev BMP, from where you will find guidance related on how to contribute, what's actually involved, and so on. Because the front page of the BMP is already, there's quite a few folders, and people might actually get lost. So we updated these URLs. The Office Dev BMP Yammer will land you to the Office 365 network, where we have the Yammer group, which is growing enormously, which is really, really good. Well, it's growing because other people are helping each other within that group, and that's usually the best thing or best way to grow those groups. Good. Some statistics. I've added actually, there's 2 months worth of statistics where we actually had some numbers from the previous month. We are actually growing quite significantly, which is really good, because more we grow, more, let's say, professional we can start acting within the program. Let's talk about that one slightly later as well. We've been forked right now 227 times, which is like 5 times more than anything else under Office Dev. And for us, that's obviously a huge thing. For the core team members, obviously, we want all of those other repositories in the Office Dev to be succeeding as well. But we've been following that number really closely, because also due to the fact that many of the SharePoint developers do not feel that familiar about the GitHub. So, and it might take a while to actually learn the GitHub process, but we do have that guidance in our wiki in the GitHub as well. So don't miss that link. We've been handling 280 merge, well, 280 merge pull requests have been done, 67 closed issues. We're still working on some of that. More than 225,666, well, more than 200. 566 persons, but not quite as 2,567. Never mind. Unique visitor during last 2 weeks, and the reason why it actually had slightly gone down from the previous month is obviously the holiday season. But it's kind of, when we're looking into individual days, we're hitting already pretty much in the 400, 500, even 600 unique visitors within a day, and that's pretty significant. That's a massive load of traffic. The NuGet package has been downloaded 4,030 times. Yammer group has 1,525 members, which is really, really significant. It's actually the biggest group related on development in the Office 365 network. And that's, like mentioned, that's really all because people are helping each other within that group. People wouldn't come back if they don't get the answers. And we try to spend as much as we can on our free time in the Yammer group as well, and help you guys on any of the questions related on samples or any of the other suggestions within the Yammer group. We do have also a Facebook page. I just wanted to test social mechanisms, which has now 121 likes. We tend to publish all of the, let's say, whenever there's a new monthly release and so on, I will use my own Twitter. We don't have a Twitter account for the PNP, but then we use the Facebook page also for that communications. Yeah, thanks, Roddy. I think many of us are GitHub noobs, so that's no worries. Thank you for your assistance. So these are the key persons who contributed for the last month. And we have Andrew Connells, Irvin Van Hoonen from Knowit, Mark Craben, Mark Wilson, Matt Masola from Microsoft, Natalie Nahan from Tieto, Radi, who commented Radi is on the call as well, Ricky Kerfman from Microsoft, Nirinx, I can't pronounce any of those Dutch names, and Vardham from Content and Code. So there's quite a lot of contributions within the last month, and we have quite a lot of new stuff, which is really nice. And obviously we have our core team, which is slightly evolving. So that's one slide coming up after a few slides. But we have Frank Burt, me, Prime Michelle Schumann, and Steve Walker, and Richard is should be actually mentioned in the core team as well. Richard Derosega. But Richard is not really, he can't participate in all of our weekly calls. He has other priorities in his life as well. So he prioritizes something else than us on top of the other stuff, which is on top of us, which is kind of sad. But that's fine. Luckily, we have small core team, which is really active. So this is essentially the list of contributions. We couldn't actually quite fit it in for the whole slide, but as an example, Paul mentioned in the IAM window the corded on-prem server-to-server Windows search store done by Rick Kirkham from Microsoft. Rick works as a technical writer, if I'm not mistaken. In the I can't remember his actual role, but he's a technical writer because he's done MSDN as well. So he helped on some of this stuff, and you can actually put your certificates now on a Windows Store, so you don't have to point them on the app config file. So that's an update, an ex actually extension to the token helper, which is really cool stuff. Matt Mazzola did a core display calendar events. It's actually really cool. It's using a third-party calendar overlays and calendar presentations, but then it's showing information related on ca multiple calendars within a SharePoint. Really cool UI stuff, which I couldn't be doing because I'm more a server-side guy. I just did a quick two demos related on the December CU. So you might have already read that from some of the some blog posts. We did release new client-side object model capabilities as part of the on-premises December CU. And for those functionalities, we did a few simple demos. So the core setting local and language is one demo, and core setting audit. Now, the core setting audit does work perfectly. But we have identified some issues related on language settings, and the regional setting is also not sufficient. It's only for adding local ID. And even though from a UI perspective, when you add a select and local ID, it is actually refreshing all of the other attributes, and that's actually within the SharePoint UI. So if you go to the team site, go to the regional settings, and you choose a additional local other than US, or you choose, let's say, UK as an example, it will refresh the default settings for UK. And that's actually a UI capability within SharePoint. So we need to get all of those additional properties exposed as well. And that's in the queue of getting done. And whenever we get that one done, that's now the ongoing discussion. Whenever we get the language settings and the regional settings fixed, we're able to then publish a new version of the client-side object model for the cloud. And I can't say a exact date because otherwise you might actually schedule your stuff based on the date, but we will do that during this first quarter of this year. I would estimate that it will go to February, but I can't say the exact date. But there will be a new redistributable package for client-side CSAM and for the on-premises CSAM. And kind of a related on that one, I'm rambling on my head, which I shouldn't be doing because we have a few demos still waiting. There are certain reasons why the on-premises and cloud are two different client-side object models. Well, first of all, in the cloud, we're running 16 version of the SharePoint. In on-premises, we're still running 15 version of the SharePoint. And there are certain significant differences. But please use the user voice as an example to indicate that if you need to have, for example, the user profile editing capability using the CSAM for on-premises, use the user voice to indicate that. I know that there is a ongoing there is an item within the user voice, for example, the user profile editing for on-premises CSAM package. Moving on the list, debug tracing, really nice example how to do debugging and tracing within the provider hosted apps. If we have time, Bert is going to demo that today. Office Graph demo and app, that's an Office Graph functionality, which is showing how that can be actually easily integrated to the app model or used within the provider hosted application, if I remember correctly. Core connected signal or AngularJS app parts. Hopefully, Brian actually was able to get that one to work. Obviously, just on the final minutes, there's always demo guards are might cause an issue because that's a super cool example. It's based on the similar technique what I showed at some point related on signal R, but then we're using AngularJS, the presentations, and so on. Really, really nice stuff. And Brian's going to show that one hopefully today. Brian, please. I am that it's okay. Please, please, please. If you're actually following up on the discussion. And actually, well, quickly, because I hear some background noise, please unmute yourself until we go to the open discussions. OD4B, OneDrive for Business Configuration Async. That's a code which I wrote, and then I wrote a blog post about it in my blog post. Really nice code which is using storage queues and automated web jobs, which will spin up based on those items which are added to the Azure storage queues. And then in the asynchronous way, we are creating or applying needed branding for the OneDrive for Business sites. We will use that storage queues and web job technique in the numerous future examples which are in the queue to be written whenever there's actually time to do that. And then Radi contributed covenants.siteUsageReport, which is a really nice example of collecting. Well, to be fair, Radi, it's not an uber complex, it's not rocket science, but it's a useful example to collect metadata on the site collections in the Office 365, and I'm not taking any value out of it. It's a really, really ready to be used example for anybody actually to collect site collection storage and use its information. So really, really powerful example. And then obviously, Irvin has been continuing working on PNP Core with Suman and Bert and a few others, most likely I missed some names from there. And then Irvin has been continuing with his baby related on PowerShell commands, which are then using the PNP Core. Really, really powerful PowerShell commandlets. Moving on the list of things, this is just I did an update, by the way, the unit list number. Sorry for that, guys. I can't remember what it is right now, but it's already relatively high. Right now, whenever we introduce changes in the PNP core, we will actually not remove any of the old methods. This is a promise what we did quite a long time ago, because we're still in the beta stage. What we are gonna think about now is that all of the methods which are not meant to be used, they are marked as deprecated. So when you actually use them and compile in Visual Studio, the Visual Studio will say, "Oh, you're actually using a deprecated method. Please use your code to use this alternative functionality." We are planning to release a V1 of the core component as part of the March release. So at part of that release, we will actually drop those methods which are no longer meant to be used. And so if there's some method which you can't actually find a correspondent functionality within the PNP core, or there's a method or the, let's say, the offered solution on the alternative is not actually what you're looking for, please let us know, because we really need to clean up the PNP core. And let's talk about that one in the two slides as well. One point, really, really big thing for us, really actually huge thing for us, because the patterns and practices, the Office 365 developer patterns and practices, the whole point of this program is not about Microsoft telling for community what to do. What we want this to be is eventually, we want this to be a fully community-driven program. And yes, the Microsoft people will be involved happily to review the stuff and ensure that they are aligned with the product engineering and the guidance and whatever is actually contributed will be there. But we want to grow the team. We want to be bigger than just a group of random persons in Microsoft who are spending their evenings and weekends to help the community. We want to be part of the community, and we want rather the community actually lead this after a while. It might take a year or two or whatever, let's see. The big thing here is that we took Erwin van Hoonen has been really, really active on the PNP stuff. He's been creating and contributing significant amount of stuff, and we were able to figure out all the legal implications on doing this, which is actually takes quite a long time. So Erwin is now part of the core team, and that's a huge thing, and we're super happy to have Erwin in the team, and that will obviously broaden our minds as well, even though we actually work with the customers every single day as well as a core team. But Erwin is from the Knowit. Erwin's going to do a quick demo later today, hopefully, so Erwin can do a quick hello, my name is Erwin at that point, because let's not actually spend I want to move on the slides. Sorry for that. But let's put it this way, 221 commits and quite a few contributions with items on the queue. So a lot of stuff. Looks kind of lazy. Monthly schedule. One of the things what we talked about already in December call, we are falling into the standardized schedule. So every single first Friday of the month, we will do a master merge. And the master merge for us means that the core team members are going to run unit tests, we're going to verify stuff, we're going to update the NuGet buckets, we're going to do the communications, we're going to do the documentation and all of that. We booked some time away for every single first Monday of every single month. And then on the second Tuesday of each month, we will have this community monthly community calls. The reason of this one is simply because when it's second Tuesday of month, it will be certainly after the first Friday of the month. So this way we can always summarize the previous month and have a look on what was actually included in the master merge. Because I think, and then we can demonstrate those functionalities, which is a really, really big thing. Oh, by the way, we have 54, 55 persons in a call. That's actually a new record, which is brilliant. Excellent. I think everybody wants to see those demos. That's probably the thing. One of the really big things for the BNB is also that we're expanding. So we have now created a new guidance repository, and this will be eventually a location where people are able to even suggest changes to the existing MSDN articles. We are working on the exit process. This will take a while, unfortunately, and due to different tooling and CMS systems. But right now, we're already open for getting in articles, which will be then linked from the articles that you're able to then link other blog posts and BNB examples and so on. So we're trying to build more IP and provide more information about the background information or the justifications. Like for example, my OneDrive for Business customization tooling, we didn't in the, we I wrote an article, or I actually took up information from my blog post, which is trying to go slightly deeper and explaining the reasoning and why certain options. What are the options and these are the options, what are the advantages and disadvantages? That's not precisely a code. That's not something what you want to have a README as part of the Visual Studio README file within the code. That's more an article, that's more additional information. And those kind of things what we want to locate in this new guidance repository. If you go aka.ms office dev bnb, that's our prefix, office dev bnb guidance, you will actually land to this repository. It's under office dev office as well. But the idea, the ultimate idea, this will take a while as mentioned. We will have a lot of the MSDN articles like the solution packs, what we've been releasing quite often during the last year. The solution packs will be actually individual articles in this guidance repository, and then you are able to submit or request changes or do, let's say, if you spot a bug there, or if you would like to add some additional context related on some article on some page any of those pages, which will be also an MSDN, you can actually submit a pull request. So that's really, really cool stuff. Right now, there's three articles, two done by Andrew Connors and one done by me. Andrew did those how configure SharePoint provider hosted apps for distribution and how configure Office 365 API project for distribution. And then I took stuff from my blog post for creating an article for how to handle OneDrive for Business customizations. Good. Moving on stuff. The BNP core component. I kind of mentioned this one already. We're targeting to have V1 on the March. And what it means is that we will actually get rid of all of the deprecated methods. If you pull down the BNP core right now, you're able to see that we already relocated all the deprecated methods in the folder structure in the Visual Studio project in a different location, and it's indicating what's actually supported and what's not. We will actually get rid of those as part of the V1 release. And then we will also remove all non-Office 365 and SharePoint extensions. This is one of the things what's, well, it kind of had an idea, but then it didn't really make any sense. So there are certain string extensions, datetime extensions. And when you think of it, why would we release datetime extensions as part of the Office 365 core, BNP core? It really doesn't make any sense. What we rather want to do is keep it simple and keep it small as small as possible. Let's not overcomplex the whole thing. And then obviously, So it will be usable. And if you want to use those other extensions, you're more than welcome to pull it down those extensions right now and add those class libraries as part of your project or package them as separate extensions. And more majority of the projects are actually using some standardized libraries for those operations anyway. Use class model for complex methods, which is one of the things. use only true at well, that doesn't make any sense. That's a good example of Finglish. Use only when truly adds value. Well, kind of makes sense. No five line methods, but it's a good guidance. We don't wanna if the method what is submitted is too simple. If it's four lines, it really doesn't add any value, because you could actually add those four lines directly to your code. But then my classic example is that we have a one method call which will give you the opportunity to add a app part or web part to any column and row within a theme site. That's actually roughly 300 lines of CSS code. But all of that is encapsulated behind of that one method. Thank you, Bert, for that. But it's a really good example. We are simplifying some operations. But let's try to keep it small. Let's keep it simple. Let's keep it efficient. And then expand where actually needed. More on that on the upcoming course. Ah, damn it, that time flies. Something related on roadmap. So this is our never updated to-do list. To be fair, all of our core team members, we are doing this on our evenings and weekends. We actually work full time with the customers during daytime. Even I do. Even though I'm working from the product crew, and that's probably the reason why we haven't been able to evolve with this that efficiency efficiently, especially from a documentation perspective. The starter kits are still we're still working on them. Improvements to the core components that are still evolving, and then we do have let's say a few ideas how we're gonna address those gaps related articles or documentation or guidance. And that's what we're going to work and sort it out with product marketing within upcoming weeks. thank you, Hugh. Less Facebook time would actually, yes. Let's restrict Facebook from the core team members. But let's actually move on the demos, because I think maturity want to actually see some of this stuff live. And Brian, because you have, no offense for Irvin or Bert, I think you have the most awesome demo. I really like that one. So if you don't mind, if you can actually start by stealing the presentation and showing what that example is actually doing. And then we move from to Irving and me, and then Bert, if you have time. Let's go that way.
Well, I'm still having issues just with the tenant, and my browser's crashing. So,
Again.
if you guys want to move on, and maybe I can see if I can get this going.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. How about you, Irving? Are we ready to do to some stuff on the core component?
Sure.
Okay, steal the presentation. You've been upgraded as a presenter, so that should be fine.
Been upgraded.
Oh, well, okay.
Right.
Good. And I'm gonna go obviously unmuted, so you can do your presentation. Oh,
Okay,
not
everyone should be able
unmuted.
to
I'm
see
gonna
my
go
screen share now.
muted. That makes more sense.
Oh, you would mute. Okay. Right, so a couple of things I want to talk about is the core project, a bit of the structure of the core project, and I will talk a bit about how we deprecate things, because if you look at it the first time, you might be a bit confused. And then I will go into how we do the testing. And so let's go into the core project itself. Let me make this a bit smaller so you can see everything a bit better. So the majority of the work actually happens in this folder, the app model extensions. So everything we write is an extension. We don't There are some methods in there, but the majority are extension methods. And then the main enabler, or the key point in this, is that we actually extend the namespace Microsoft SharePoint Client. So basically, if you implement the client framework, the SDK, and you also reference our core DLL, you automatically get our extension methods on all the objects, like the list object and etc. So that is a benefit. So basically all the work happens basically in these classes. So going into the deprecation, because I don't want to go into much detail on what happens in the classes, but how do we deprecate things? basically what we do is we mark a method as obsolete, and then we move it to the deprecated folder. And there we create a class with the same name as, like, for instance, list extensions, but then we add the .deprecated extension.cs. That's what we call it. And in deprecated class, there we have everything marked as obsolete. And if there is a new equivalent, then we say use that method or use this method or use that method with this parameter, etc. But that's how we do it. So this helps us basically keep the classes clean and mean. And before March, when we do the V1 release, we basically just take away this folder. And then we have a clean V1 without any deprecated or obsolete that's in there. So that's the idea behind how we do deprecation in this in the core project. Testing. So a couple of months ago when we started, like, hey guys, we really have to start to do some tests here, we have to really implement some unit testing, we started to think about how to handle this. And of course we were running into Office 365 or against Office 365, and that makes it a tiny bit more complex to test, because we need SharePoint, we need a site to connect to. So if you have an MSDN license or you have access to a tenant, you could set up a site where you can use for testing, and that's how we approach it. So you need an Office 365 or an on-prem SharePoint environment to run tests against the core library. We don't have full coverage yet, but we work on it. As one of the slides previously said, we have 133 tests, and that grows, and sometimes we remove, we deprecate things, and yeah, things show up. But it's around 133 right now. So if you look at one of the tests, like take the list extensions, some of the tests require things to be in place. For instance, if we add, if we test for a field to be added, a method that adds a field to a list, we need that list to be in place. So the whole idea behind this, we use the Microsoft unit testing framework here, is that every test has an, if needed, an initialize method that creates the plumbing, the framework, the things to be there that you need to be present for your tests to succeed. The same way, there is a cleanup method. That is, when the tests are all done, the cleanup method will be called by the testing framework, and it will clean up the lists and all the artifacts that have been created during the test. So it's important that you write your tests in such a way that when the test has been executed, everything is gone, that you have a clean, empty site, basically. That's the whole idea behind it. So all the tests require a client context. So if you go to one of the tests, for instance, let's go for the fields and for, content types, and we're going to create go to the create field test method here. you see here that it's calling test common create client context. So this is a helper method, and the helper method builds up a connection to your designated test site that you defined. And that test site is defined in a file called app-config. We included an app-config sample here. And if we look in the sample, there's a couple of things you have to set up. First, you have to specify the URL to your tenant. Because one of the tests, for instance, is to create a site collection. And for that, you need tenant access, tenant admin access. Then the URL to your actual site that you use for your testing. And then a couple of months ago, when we started this, the only way for us to authenticate it was with a hard-coded username and a password. And I've been coding tests, and I added some new tests and committed that and published it as a pull request, and it was merged. And then I got an email from a very kind developer in Egypt telling me, like, hi, Erwin, didn't you just submit your password? And I actually did. So my password was in the app config, and that was included in the project. And I started to sweat. It was on a Saturday evening, and I started to sweat like crazy because can I get rid of the password from the internet? And no, there is unfortunately no way to get rid of it in GitHub. So we had to come up with another solution. In the PowerShell library, I already implemented similar code, so I copied that over to this project. And what it does here is I'm using the credential manager of Windows. So what you can do in the credential manager is create an entry there, give it a name, enter usually in a password, and then what you specify in your app config, you specify that name here. Show anything you do. So at runtime, when the tests are executed, it will retrieve the credentials from your credential manager, Windows credential manager, and authenticate against your development site or your test site with those credentials. That is how I do it. Another way, if you insist, you can still just specify your username and your password. Another way of doing it, if you're testing it on-prem, then you can specify a user and domain and a password. And you can actually even use an app token if you want to, with a realm and an app ID and a secret. So there's three ways and four ways to authenticate against it. Where this is the one I use. This one is, I would say, the ugliest one. And this is a quite okay version, the priority 3 version 2. So this is how we connect. Now, you will see that if you look at my file here, there is a little checked in here, but the app config is not checked in. We actually told Git to ignore the app config. So that one is just your file. It will not be committed to the repository. So no will go up, it will, so your, if your password is there, it will not go up the wire. You see, this is my app config. I have a tenant URL, a dev site URL, my credential manager label, and my username and password is not specified. Well, my username is specified because some tests require a user to be added to a group, for instance, and it needs to know a user that is available on your tenant. So that's why I specify the username. So testing itself, as I said, it's the test framework from Microsoft. So if we go for the field and content type, you can just right click on the field here and say run the test. If I go to the test and go to Windows Test Explorer, you will see all the tests here. It will start to execute the test. And after a while, in this case, it took 9 seconds, the test was succeeded and everything went okay in this case. If you insist on running all the tests in one go, and I just for the sake of it, I did it yesterday, it will take more than half an hour to run all the tests. And the main reason for that is that, of course, it connects to the cloud, it goes to your tenant online and starts to provision site collections. It creates lists, adds columns, uploads apps, uploads solution files, removes apps, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of things happening, and it makes it slow. So most of the time, I don't think you will run all the tests in one go, but if you insist, you can obviously do that. So the key thing here is that you configure your app config file correspondingly and correctly, so you can actually connect to your tenant, connect to your dev site, and then you have to pick a way to authenticate against those sites. That is how I test. And this is, of course, very limited in time. I can probably talk for a bit longer about the core model here. As Faiza mentioned, if you submit something, and please submit your methods, I know there's golden code out there, make sure that it actually adds, so no five-liners, but some long code. That's what I wanted to say for now.
Good. Thanks, Erwin. Brian, what is our status related on your awesome example? Brian.
Oh, sorry, Vesa. Getting a little closer. Not there yet.
Okay. That's cool. So I'm going to do my one try for customization. I'm going to run to actually concentrate on the code, even though there was a, okay, so there was a 30 minute, which is way too long, by the way, but that's a bad habit of mine, video, which I did on this particular fellow. But let's have a look on what does it actually mean and how does it actually work. And I'm going to throw some stuff in here. So this is the OneDrive for business configuration and async method. And this is an adaptation of a project which I actually did more than a year ago. But at the time, it was based on the model that you need to have a front page intranet in Office 365. This is still a page based on that similar approach. Then you put a hidden app part. The app part could be a 0 pixel times 0 pixel wide, so nobody's actually seeing that. But that is the one which is responsible of taking your user context and then applying your needed customizations to your OneDrive for Business site, because it's using your existing Azure U as an executor for the content itself. So this is the problem of that one. The challenge of that one was that that part actually took quite a long time to execute, because it was uploading themes, it was uploading other stuff. So therefore, we needed to start thinking an alternative method to do so. And what wouldn't be more easier than using actually the WebJob technology with the storage queue. And Tobias, who we have on the call, just wrote an excellent article related on web jobs and how to use them in Office 365. You should probably, if you're not familiar with that, with this technology, read the Tobias blog post, and then you can actually have a closer look on this one. But what we do here is that we combine the Azure storage queues. So from the UI perspective, we add an item to this storage queue, and that will be automatically picked up by the web job. And that's a really, really significant thing. And it's from a web job framework perspective, it's actually really amazing what it means, or the simple stuff what it actually means. Because the only thing what I need to do from a web job perspective is set my queue trigger to be matching the storage name. And now there's quite a lot of background noise again. Somebody is not unmuted. Somebody is muted. Good, thank you. And what this does is that I can actually now, this web job will be running continuously within my storage, within my Azure. And I, in here, we have a main, we have a web job host and run and plug. What it means is that it will be waiting there for the queue items to be created. And now what's going to happen is that that hidden app part, which will be in the front page of the intranet where the users are actually arriving, will be the one which is adding a task to the queue. So it will be the one which is actually adding a task to the storage queue, and that doesn't actually take it that long time. So I'm going to walk through the code. There is that 20 minutes walkthrough on pretty much everything within that this solution. But I'm going to quickly run through the whole idea. So we have an app part, which is essentially pointing to the provider-hosted application. That's my customizer ASPX. And this is, like mentioned, it's meant to be hidden. Nobody is able to see this, but it's meant to be in the front page of the corporate intranet. So that so whenever the people are opening up their browser, this app part will be executed. The app part, the provider-hosted application has then the, where's my provider-hosted application? There we go. There's my customizer. It actually has the needed code. First of all, it is doing some performance optimization, cookie check, for example. Really good practice. We're storing the executions of this provider-hosted application to local cookies, because there's really no point to access the user profile store in every single request what the end user is doing. Let's rather actually go there once within, let's say, 20 minutes, once within an hour, once within 24 hours. Really, it depends, obviously, on the functionality. Whenever we need to actually execute this, we go to the user profile, we check the user account, and we check if that particular user's personal site already exists. This is pretty much old stuff what we had previously as well. If that particular user's OneDrive for Business site doesn't exist, we're using client-side object model actually to queue up that creation. And that's going to be then asynchronous, that's done, and we're going to move on. There's a time and job then within the server side in the Office 365, which will actually create the OneDrive for Business site. Whenever the OneDrive for Business site exists, what we do is that we add a configuration request to the queue. And what this means is that we're using essentially the storage queues to add an item to the storage queue so that our web job will be fired as an asynchronous process to actually start working on that request. So this is kind of a similar thing as a one-time executable timer job. I can see some familiar faces and familiar people also from MCM timeframe, where we talked about the timer jobs and different options. The one-time executable timer job is actually an interesting option in server-side. But this is pretty much the same thing, but we use the Windows Azure to do that. which is really cool. And what we've done here is that we also, well, what I've done here is that we also added all of these required methods to, let's say, a common class. And what that gives us is then the opportunity to mimic the situation, the whole process, without even deploying anything to the Windows Azure or even to the Office 365. So I can actually build my business logic using this these centralized components and make sure that they, all of these are actually working, adding the identity queue is working and all of that. I could actually use test projects and then to verify these methods. In my case, I know that I'm a bad habit, but I tend to write console applications, and in this case, I have a console application for reset or apply for the customizations to OneDrive for Business sites, and then I have a console application to send that message. So I can actually now mimic the whole situation without even deploying the app and without even deploying the web job and the Windows Azure. And let's do that one actually in practice, because I want to have still Brian some time to show his stuff. So there's my OneDrive for Business site. What I've done within this tenant is that I've used Office 365 themes, and that's the reason why the top bar is red. But we can see that the icons and the text is still blue, and that's using the Office theme. That's not nice. So let's actually have a look on what would actually happen in the real world. So in the real world, we would have that app part in the centralized location of the intranet. And that app part would spin up that Windows Azure message, a storage queue message, using this the storage queue mecha method, what we actually have in here. It's only a few lines of code, and it's creating that queue if it doesn't exist. What I'm doing here is that I'm adding a site modification data object to that queue, and that's it from a sending perspective. So let's actually execute that one in practice. So what I'm going to do is that I'm going to start a new instance. Let's see which of the screens the instance is getting started. Where is it? It's over there. So it's executing, and I'm going to just pass that through. It doesn't take long. This is having the app config, is having the needed configuration to my Windows Azure storage. You can't see the full account key, so that's fine. What happened? Sorry for that. It has the storage connection string and it's connecting to the Windows Azure, adding that new item to the queue. What I have on the left side is the Windows Azure Server Explorer, which I've already extended to the storage section, and underneath my VSRJ, which was the storage name, I have queues, and within under there I can see that I have an OD4B config queue. So I can now go and have a look and verify that actually within my queue I have an item. I actually have three items which are requesting account to be or site to be branded. So essentially, this will be then the one which is firing the web job, and web job is getting this information. We have all the needed information tail, which is the site URL and the account ID. We're not actually doing anything with the account ID within the sample. And then what will happen is that within the web job, and what happened within my mouse? Come on, there we go. Within my web job, let's have a look on that one. Only thing what we do here is that we use the app-only token, so we're getting access on the site using the app-only token, the app ID and app secret, which is already pre-registered. It's kind of at the time remote time job way of doing that. We do have some configuration related on what theming, what JavaScript customizations will be applying. But then what I'm doing is that I'm actually running this, again, a centralized component, which is the site modification manager apply site configuration. So now I don't need to actually deploy my web chat to the Windows Azure to mimic this situation, because again, I have the console application, or it could be a test project, which I'm able to, I'm just updating the code, I'm just quickly zooming that one, changing that not from to reset, rather to apply. So what I'm now doing is that I'm actually passing through, I'm mimicking that my web job is being executed, and I'm doing a debug start new instance to make sure that my business logic is working properly. And definitely, you can imagine that actually originally I didn't have a web capture project. I didn't have an app part project. I didn't have any provider hosted application that now it's executing. Now it's applying the configurations. I didn't have anything like that. I just concentrated on this business logic using client-side object model, using the CSAM interfaces to verify that all of this is working. And then I started expanding that how do we expose this information and the functionality within the UIs and what it means actually within the Windows Azure. It's still executing, and this is the reason why the synchronous way of applying this stuff is not the best one. Now it's actually stopped. And now if we go, I go to the IE. Did I actually kill my, no, I didn't. There is my OneDrive for Business. And let's actually refresh this one. You're able to see that we have successfully applied the custom branding, which is essentially a custom theme within this case, because we definitely don't recommend you to do custom master pages within OneDrive for Business sites. That would be just foolish. But what I've done here is that we applied a theme, which is actually the bringing the red colors and fonts, and then the background color image as a garage. We also have this JavaScript injection, which is actually coming from the root side of the OneDrive for Business site. So there's only one JavaScript file which we need to maintain. This is relatively typical. It's saying OneDrive Business should not be used for storing high confidential files. Check company policy. That could be a link to the centralized policy file. What else have we done is that if you go the site content, how do we actually? It's absolutely fully hidden right nowadays. Site content. There it is. These constant changes are fun. Oh, we got that one recorded as well. Damn it. So if I go to the site content, one additional thing, what the JavaScript and customizations are doing, you can't actually create subsites. In my particular case, I've already created a block 9 months ago, but we don't have that create a subsite link visible. This is just a JavaScript injection technique. We're just hiding that link. So technically, the person could actually do that, but majority of the end user wouldn't be able, they don't actually understand how to, let's say, hide those settings and hide those things. Good. Quick run through on things. We have 8 minutes. Brian, can you show the UI at least?
Yeah, actually, I got something working here. So
yes,
I had to make brilliant.
Just to steal the presentation.
Yeah, I had to make a few changes. So let me share this. Okay.
I'll mute myself. So Brian, your call for the let's say 5 to 7.
So
five
I'll
to
try to make
minutes.
This quick.
Yep.
Okay. So what we've got here is just extending on that's a sample, and we're just trying to show using SignalR, but also kind of do this in Angular and showing connected web parts. And I use a corporate events sample. We've got some. We've got some sessions and speakers and events. I've got some dummy data that comes in the sample. But what these guys do here is basically just pull from these lists. And so when I select one here, what it does is using SignalR, it goes and gets all the related sessions basically for that event. And so if I jump back over here to my code, and as you can see here, I got these.
Brian,
I didn't
sorry,
all my...
Brian, sorry. Can you put your page on the edit mode? I don't think it's like, is that JavaScript or just to show that they're independent app parts?
Yeah, I can do that. And I was going to jump over and show the JavaScript real quick. So what these are, this is the corporate events app part. And this is the event sessions app part. And if I go to add something like so I've got a new events app part here. I've got speakers, corporate events, and sessions. I only added the two right now. But is it events, you've got delete event, you've got add a new event item. And basically how that works is using a JavaScript model back here. So what it'll do is it'll send a message, right, to SignalR, if you're not familiar with it, and through this hub. And what that hub will do, so we turn around and broadcast that out, right? So this code I'm working on right now, I'm actually making it unique to sessions. So I had to make a few changes before this demo to get a few other things working because the other one wasn't playing nicely. But what this will do is broadcast out to a group, right? So if I select an event, if the speakers and sessions app parts are part of that group, they'll get the communication back saying, hey, something's changed. And when that comes back, through JavaScript, they'll go there, the data they're supposed to get, right? So if I select an event, the session says, oh, got an event selected. I'm going to, through SignalR, tell me which event it was. I'm going to go get the data. And everything is done here in AngularJS. So I've got a top level app.module JavaScript file, and I pull in these other modules, and I've kind of broken everything out into folders. So you've got an events module, and then you've got these controllers here, right? So this is my app events module, and this is my events, or I'm not using scope. Root scope and callbacks and SignalR service class, and I've got some methods commented out so that we can turn back on later. The only thing I'm doing right now are adding in canceled events. But the other hooks are there. So I'm passing through the session name. Sorry if I'm fast. I'm trying to get this covered before we run out of time here. But in the way JavaScript communicates with SignalR is through a proxy, and you can have this proxy auto-generated, or you can use a tool to do it. I've got this proxy class here with all my new events. Selected session change, event change, etc. So when I select an event in the UI, it's firing off the selected event change. And I'm communicating with the hub right that, and it's passing back to everybody listening, right, as part of that group, that an event was. And they, like I said, they'll get the necessary data. But as you can see, it's all broken down by, the example, right, events, session speakers. And it's all just AngularJS. I've got a data service here. So I go back here and we'll back to the page and up editing. And again, like I said, if I select event number two, it sent that message to SignalR, it sent the event ID back, and the sessions then went, use a data service in Angular, and pulled the related sessions. So, using this model, I can add as many, app parts as I want to this. I can add an associated controller for it, and, I can make use of the data service, I can make use of the SignalR service and core. I mentioned using session names and stuff. What I'm doing is I'm making this, set up so that it can run in its own session or it can run across multiple pages. So anyway, that's kind of how that's broken down. I think I'm about out of time.
No worries. Correct, thanks, Brian. Yeah, so we have a 1 minute for Q&A, which is not much. But this 1 hour is always tough to do. So, but this is that's really, really a cool sample because it actually gives parts are talking between each other using the server-side codes, using the signal R, and it's filtered based on a session of a particular user or your prior working on that one. So that's an super cool demo. I'm not capable of understanding that JavaScript. Some of the people in this call are, which is really good, and like you are. So awesome job on that contribution. But it really is a powerful UI.
Yeah, the UI was not, I didn't spend a whole lot of time in that. It's just I'm just binding, to a repeater and using the data model from the controller, right? But it's all Angular. Sorry, Vess.
Yep, no worries, no worries. Just a closing up. So we run out of actually time. We don't have a hard stop. If you guys have any questions or suggestions or feedback, who are on the call still, I do know that we spent slightly more time than actually needed, unfortunately. And for Anthony, we luckily got this recorded, so you can actually watch the demos at least in the recording. If there's any other comments, questions, feedback, and please use the Yammer group. That's our primary channel on getting our feedback in. We're highly interested. And obviously, if there's a box within any of the samples within the GitHub, go and create an issue. Or an enhancement issue or a suggestion issue. That's a one way of contributing back. Yeah, that was what I'm expecting. People do have other meetings waiting in the queue, so no worries about that one. And we wanted to maximize at the same time to the time for demos. And we're going to continue doing the demos on the, I think we need to be fair at 50-50, 30 minutes demos, 30 minutes as a summary and what we have and if there's any news, what we should be recording. Thank you everybody who joined. And as said, if you have still any questions, feel free to ask. Use the Yammer group and give us feedback, give us input. And be also patient. We do this on evenings and weekends after the customer work has been completed. So, and feel free to contribute. That's always a good thing as well. So we're really, really want to grow also the core team and also the contribution team. So thanks, Chris. Excellent feedback. Sharing is caring. Thank you, Bert. But if there's no, let's say, urgent questions, we can certainly close up the call and continue on the Yammer, Twitter issue and the GitHub lists. And feel free to be, and please be active. So we'll be in touch. And if nothing else, we hopefully are able to see you, and we'll see you on within the next monthly call, which is on the second Tuesday of February. Again, remember the date. And that's in the wiki for details. Thanks, guys, for all of your time and for all of the contributions as well.